Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the French Connection Sunday night edition. Today's date is the second day of August 2009. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you all here with me for another important informational broadcast about the state of our world. And happy to have with me tonight, as we've been doing for quite some time. We've missed a few weeks because of summer schedules. But my returning guest for Sunday night's discussions is, of course, my friend and collaborator on a lot of work, Ognir or Noel from TIU Radio and the TIU Forum. That is the Information Underground. And I couldn't be happier to have him. Noel, are you with me?
Hi, Darren. Yeah, all fired up, ready to go.
Well, you know, so much happening out there on the periphery. One of the things that I've been reading about lately is that there are experts, contrarian experts, people who have not stuck with the mouthpiece crap in the media, but contrarian experts who said the dollar's devaluation may be imminent, meaning they're talking about a possible 30% devaluation of the dollar. And what one of these people said, I saw this on Kitco, one of them said that the devaluation would come without warning. They would not want to give anybody in the marketplace heads up on the devaluation. They would do it, out of left field, so everybody would be caught out, and that 30% would be just wiped off everybody's value. Now, that would be devastating. We can talk a little bit about that. What is your take on that?
Well, you know, Darren, the rumors there, I mean, it probably comes up every time there's a big financial crisis that, you know, they'll have a long weekend, close the banks, people won't be able to get their money, and you know, it'll be political instability, and then they'll come up with this plan, dollar has to be devalued, the Chinese renminbi will have to go up in value, and you know, whatever. After the last year, I mean, people, if they had money, got, you know, 40, 45% of it wiped out. All these big gains this year are more in you know, 45% ups in March 9th, which is the lowest point in the market in recent times, doesn't make any difference to me. We need to deal with the Jewish owners of the Federal Reserve, the Bank of England. We need to deal with fractional reserve banking. We need ideas and solutions. And yet the rest of it is all on the outside to me. I'm really fired up today, Daryl. I've been listening to a lot of the talking heads, very well respected people. I'm not going to criticize them, except it's not as pure play as I like. And you know, this basically works down, Daryl. It's about me, it's about my partner and the kids and my friends and my family in Switzerland, yep, and in France and in, yep, Ireland, and your family and in where you live and in Lyon in America. We need to you know, really look after our own, because these people are not going to. Now, the big problem is fractional reserve banking. I'm just going to give a little reminder. I know your listeners, Daryl, are very well aware of what fractional reserve banking is.
Yep.
So these international Jewish bankers, and you know, they're not, you know, when you say that, ooh, you're used to the Federal Reserve is owned by Jews, the international bankers that put in the money and scammed the government originally in 1913, and you know, with the Federal Reserve Act passed in 1913. But you need to look past that and look into the context of the situation of what was happening at the time. You know, people at the time were actually looking for some sort of a Federal Reserve system. Darryl, you know, this wasn't a, you know, an international Jewish plan as such. It was, but it not as obvious to the people.
Well, they had some front men out there that they had financed. One of them that they used quite effectively was, of course, Pierpont Morgan, and he was the guy that in 1908 inflicted a terrible depression on America, because America had come out, by the states individually had come out against the central bank. And so what they did is they whipped upon the whole country this terrible depression. And as they were coming up to 1913, there was another groundswell of people saying they weren't interested in having a privately owned bank run in America. And that was when they threatened a second time to have a second depression, much like the first. And of course, they had done this earlier with Andrew Jackson, but Andrew Jackson stood him down. Well, this, of course, 1913 gave us Woodrow Wilson, and of course, these people were not interested in. He wasn't interested. He was a compromised guy. He wasn't interested in standing up to anybody. Instead, what he did was he signed off on it. Now we got Jekyll Island, and you wanted to bring up that. I think we mentioned something about that in a private call.
Yeah, well, you know, it's around that time period. You know, you're talking about the bank runs in 07 and 08, and then the famous, you know, very, very secretive meeting on this private Jewish island off the coast of Georgia in the U.S., where, you know, all the bankers apparently took a private rail car and, you know, met in secret and used only their first names, and they came up with this plan for the Federal Reserve in a 2-week meeting or a week meeting in Jekyll Island or on Jekyll Island, and things that came back then to New York and put it into motion. But, you know, you're talking about Morgan and the different the Rockefellers and, you know, the most powerful people at the time. But this is all baloney, Darrell. This is all baloney. This is these were all Rothschild front men, and this is what it goes. I mean, if you look at today's who are the richest men in the world, so you go Soros and Bill Gates, another Jewish guy, and, you know, the list goes down of these people that support Zionism. But nowhere on the list will you see a Rothschild. Now, these people, from what I can figure out, with all their different collusions with the Warburgs and Kuhn and Loeb and Rockefellers,
yep.
And that they actually have a control of over 50% of the privately owned Federal Reserve system.
So, well, it's more than that.
Just saying, you know, being conservative, Darrell, you just need 50.1% if that's the way they're going to vote in a bloc. It's a bloody banking, Jewish banking cartel, and then we adapt forward 90 years, and here we are going to audit the Fed or abolish the Fed, and you put a rat in the corner, Darrell, and these people are liable to. I'm not so sure what they're doing, but we need to get rid of them and fast.
Well,
I'm really, you know, been reading a couple of books I got off your website. There are one or two that I printed a couple of months ago, and I can start reading, and you go into these banking, the banking scams, and then, you know, listening to people like Carp, they listen to him during the week, and a few other heads, and, you know, they'll give you all the facts, but they don't give you the real names of the people behind it, because they're afraid, Darrell. They're bloody afraid.
Do you think it's afraid, or do you think it's intentional? I mean, because, you know, a lot of people
depending on who you're talking about. People like Tarpley is, you know, a very educated guy, very, very smart guy. I like some of his information. He goes there, you know, he does have some good information, but avoids who the real people are behind the control of our fiat money system. And, you know, some of his information is good, but he's not going the full way. And we're in perilous times, Darrell. You know, September's looming. Anything could happen. It could be next year. It could be 2012, you know, and then they'll say, well, you know, this is a Mayan prophecy on the 21st of December 2012 that the international bankers collapsed, and, you know, that was what the Mayans meant. And these people are into symbolism. You know, you've had Tex Mars on. I've had him on. They're into this numerology and numbers, and I think it's all baloney. These people, this cartel of international Jewish bankers, have a plan that we're not quite aware of. We don't know the dates, but we want to get really legging it and getting up to speed.
Well, you know that using those numbers and that stuff like that, all of this booga booga stuff that they turn to, keeps people walking around in this mystified state. You'll see them, they're the backers of Scientology. You'll see them, they're the backers of, you take a look at the Mormon religion, and I mean, I'm going to get a lot of emails for this, but take a look at the symbolism in Mormon, in the Mormon religion. They've got Stars of David in their nomenclature. They've got a lot of Kabbalistic imagery in their stuff. You take a look at the Pentecostals, the same thing, and my point is, when you take a look at how religion is used as a tool to manipulate the masses, now being spiritual and understanding that we are spiritual beings is something quite different than turning your life and your responsibilities over to an organized religion. And see, this is where I part company with all of these people. I'm not going to ever say that this knucklehead in Rome is God's representative on Earth. Nor would I ever say that, this is what people in their religion claim. Now, that's an absolute nonsense in my view. But here's the point. That doesn't mean that people understanding that human beings are basically vessels that are useless unless they have a spiritual dimension to the way they see the world. We are what we say we are in many ways, because if you walk around being frightened to death by the likes of Alex Jones always whipping, they're coming to get you, they're going to eat your babies, they're going to put you in a FEMA camp, they're going to drive you over. They're going to stop you on the road. They're going to sell your children. And it goes on and on and on, and there's a droning sound of this sickness that comes bellowing out of this bulbous, nonsense, foolish Jabba the Hutt bonehead. And I'm telling you that what he's there is he's a vexation to that spiritual understanding we have with one another. And he does vexate people, and he does confuse them, and as a result, many people that listen to that clod end up being actionless. They don't take actions. They sit there and wait for the next bellowing broadcast from this boob. Now, he uses the likes of Tarpley and Watt and this guy Maxwell and Schoenman and all these other shills who will go right up to the gate of the truth and then grab you by the neck and pull you away from who did it. And that's exactly what you were talking about.
They also have coast to coast, Darrell, with between 16 and 20 million nightly listeners. George Norrie, and although I find George Norrie fairly acceptable, he's covered 9/11 and different aspects. But the next night on, you have Bigfoot. Next night, you have UFOs. The next night, 6,000-year-old mythology, and it goes on and on. Not to eat. And then the next night he'd do on with on banking and stuff. And it depends on your time frame. My time frame is. We're in a critical stage.
Yep.
For the human race, that oblivious to any religious or colors or blacks, interests me not. When the proverbial doo-doo hits the proverbial fan, it'll be every man and every families and small communities to line up and to survive as an ensemble. And color and religion won't make that much. It'll be what you can do for your small little group to exist. This swine flu is coming up, Darren. It's all over the place. They're going to have the U.S. troops help out with distribution. I don't care. I'm heading for the mountains. If the Swiss ever say, you're getting forced vaccinations, I'm out of here.
Well, and this is just the point. That one of the things that the likes of Jones have propagated here, and regardless of his stand on the vaccines, he's got people so cowering and so frightened that they're afraid to talk to each other. They don't go out. He doesn't push into the idea that we as a collective force are going to take these people out. Instead, what he does is he creates derision by using fear, and it's quite a sophisticated approach to destroying our attempts at stopping this mess. But I got to say to you, and I said this to my neighbor today, in spite of what's coming, that the saying I keep running through my head is the Chinese saying that may you live in interesting times. Now, of course, I would never have asked for this kind of ending to my existence on this planet, and of course, I'm heading into the twilight years in 50-year-old plus. However, I'm here. And I'm not going to be a coward by these events. Instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go forward with my life joyfully as I can, trying to inform as many people as I can, and take a stand that is firm and within my moral compass. And sadly, Noel, and I want you to speak on this right now, the moral compass of most people is spinning in circles. They don't know what they stand for anymore. People don't know what they stand for. And you would have asked an American. My wife told me when all this started, don't worry, Daryl. This was back in when I was still living in Lyon. She said, don't worry. I have faith in the Americans. They'll stand up. Well, look what's happened 7 years later, 6 years later. Not a group has been able to stand up effectively. None. Now, that doesn't mean people don't know, because they do know. What it means is that they've cowered the public, and they are sitting there like little hairless chihuahuas shaking. What do we do to get them to stop shaking and take a stand? You know, it's much easier to be courageous than it is to be a coward, because a coward lives in constant fear.
Well, you know, Darrell, you mentioned Jones. Jones is also a bloody liar. I was listening to an audio during the week. Listen to several. One that I've listened to several times before was Bill Cooper, who was murdered in November 2001.
Yep.
Was on the Alex Jones show once. Now, Jones, it took many years for the actual audio to come out, and eventually we got it. A few years ago it came out, and I've listened to it several times. And Cooper, now, this guy Cooper had run his show on shortwave for many years, and he was wrong for many years about the moon bases. He admitted that he was wrong about the moon bases, and he was fed a whole load of bull, and he was in army intelligence and whatever. But this guy definitely, from my point of view, got me thinking about, don't believe everything your government said. Now, this guy, long before I even thought about, in my 20s, early 20s, I'm 42, this guy was doing his shows and broadcasting, that the government were going to introduce, martial law, and they were going to poison the foods. And, he went off on the moon base, he went off, did a mea culpa and said he was wrong. Now, he was on the Jones show. Now, there's an audio that came out a few years later that some guy called in and he asked Bullhorn about AJ, about Cooper, and AJ said, the audio's out there on the internet, he said, I had him on my show, and he was cussing, and this, and he was a drunk, and I'd never have him on, which is an absolute lie. But then again, look at who Jones is connected to, these We Are Change, you obviously kind of, We Are Change New York, We Are Change London, We Are Change everything.
Radowski, and Stein, and Dyke,
all in association. In association with Jones and that other Jewish guy with guy with
Burmese, yeah.
And all of these guys, which aren't, the guys in Daryl in our movement that have listened to your shows and listened to other broadcasts know that Burmese is an absolute disgrace, and they eventually, a month later they canned him. He's down to, I think, once a week show. They got rid of him. He was trying to, AJ's little training monkey. So when he could take his holiday up to Hollywood and talk to his Jewish handlers, that he'd have someone to fill in for him. Because, the guy does a lot of radio, 3-4 hours a day. He seems to be on 6-7 days a week. He seems to always be on, and he's calling in and whatever. 14 years to find out what Zionism is. Now he talks about it all the time, but then he goes back talking about other stuff into the scare tactics. But then you have all of these umbrella groups that are on. And we talk about the different umbrella groups of the government and the bankers and the State of Israel, obviously. But Jones also has these umbrella groups that are not showing people what they really need to see.
That's
explaining
right.
What fraction... Now, Jones knows very, very well, Daryl, what a fractional reserve banking is. He talked about it 10 years ago. I've listened to the audio. When he first came out and he was breaking out on radio... He was very open about what the bankers and the bankers' plan, not mentioning the origins, the Kabbalistic background of these bankers, but went, mentioning that the Federal Reserve was a private bank. So somewhere along the line, when he got onto radio, big-time radio, the Jewish advertisers, I don't know what it was, or that he kind of sidestepped the issue for many years, and that's what's poked him he's put him in a hole. He's a liar. He defended these people by his ignorance of them, not mentioning.
Oh, I don't think. I think it's actually overt defense. I think, in my view, I think it is.
Well, it's very, and now, you know, this year, 2009, he's, the ADL are after him,
That's to give him cred. That's to give him street cred. He needs street credibility to hang on to the position.
Yeah, well, you know, it goes into all of these events, all of these... listen, the problem is the Jews, Israel is in trouble. The criminal state is in trouble. The world is really starting to have it. Now, although it's not a completely side issue for me, the current holocausting of the Semite... Gazans, the Palestinian people. But, I mean, even if you look at... what's happening in the West Bank, you have Fatah, which are, you know, controlled by Israel,
yeah.
Then you have Hamas. Now, the thing is, you need to tie it in with the bankers and the buying of the media and the advertisers, and that, to go back to prior to Jekyll Island, or go back to the last century, you know, getting their Russian mafia into the States in the early 20s, getting the rest of their brethren criminals out of Russia in the 80s and 90s, you know, that the special program bring all these Russians. Because I remember seeing this on TV. The Cold War is ending, and, you know, we're going to make an offering, and Russia are going to let some dissidents. Now, I
understand
the word dissident. Now, I know I'm coming back to, I'm 15 or 14, living in Ireland, watching Irish mainstream media, RT1 or RT2. And they're saying, you know, we're going. It's a gift. We're going to let several hundred thousand people leave Russia, you know, this communist state, and go to America. Now, they didn't say that these were Jews.
That's right, they didn't.
Anyone that said the word Jews. Now, this is their mafia that was built up, you know, Meyer Lansky, Mo Dalitz, you can go back. But they had control of the media. They got straight into control of the TV in the 50s because they understood what the power of it is. So, I mean, me growing up, I go back to my childhood, Darryl, you know, 15, 18. You ask any 18-year-old, even today, an association game. I said, I will show you a word. I want you to associated with a nationality. If I say mafia, what would you say, Darryl?
Of course, I'd say Italian. Yeah,
Italian.
Yeah.
So that's the power. They don't talk about Mo Dalitz and Meyer Lansky. Bugsy Steiner. And
yeah.
The list goes on and in Chicago and Cleveland. The list goes on. And this guy, Mo Dalitz, this scumbag, mass murderer, bootlegger, and absolutely one of the head crime bosses. If you go back to 85, the ADL, because remember, the ADL were getting lots of this illegal money from the likes of these Jewish crime lords. And in 1985, they gave him a big award, you know, as a super citizen. This guy was a criminal. And then, you know, looking to, well, you know, why wasn't this reported in the mainstream media that this very, very well-known criminal, I mean, a super criminal, got a huge award from the ADL, and no one mentioned it.
Well, it's like the work that Abramoff was doing as a lobbyist with direct access to the White House and the George Bush clan, and then of course he's setting up the patsies needed for the blame game on 9/11. But he was also involved in stealing non-Jewish assets from a guy who built a multi-million dollar cruise ship and gambling boat and empire, and then murdered the guy. Everyone knew he had done it, but when the guy, you know, when they came, the evidence started pointing to Abramoff. Of course, this was in Florida, so this is George Bush's brother in charge of it, and of course everything was swept under the rug. But you know, is it an accident that all the cocaine and drugs were coming into Miami through the Murano Jewish connection to Central America and South America? Absolutely not. And it's the same Miami banks run by Zionist Jews in the United States that was funneling money back to old Europe and back to Israel. And that stuff has been going on for the last 30 years. And of course, when things were starting to hot up in the investigation process, Abramoff was just, he's a good guy, blah, blah, blah. Now, when they did finally get so much public anger about what Abramoff had done, they got him on the slight lightest, on the least a serious charge they could get him on. And of course, now he's scot-free. He's not in jail for murder. He's not in jail for helping the patsies of 9/11.
Muhammad Atta, exactly.
Right. I mean, the guy, Muhammad Atta, was on his boat on a free voyage, and the people who worked for Abramoff said, yeah, I served that guy. He was drunk, and he was getting hammered. Does this sound like a Muslim fundamentalist to you, a guy getting hammered and flashing money around? And somebody else said that he used a credit card that the girl noticed was expired. And yet, you cannot use in one of these machines an expired credit card because it won't work. When she put the thing in there, it worked, and she brought it. She was so shocked that an expired card would work that she brought it to her boss. And the boss was surprised. He wasn't Abramoff at the time. He was the guy working on the boat. But they put the money through on the expired card. Who was filling an expired credit card with money? Who was charging that stuff? Come on.
I'm not so sure it was an expired card, darling. It was just a card with a magnetic code.
No, somebody reported, one of the gals that was working there said the card had an expiration date that already passed and it was still accepting charges.
Well, you know, it's all electronic money. Anything you put in a validation code, and the credit companies, if they're told to say yes, it's yes. But I mean, it was probably a Mossad card. You know, these. What I'm saying,
a Mossad card never expires.
It doesn't expire. It didn't exist, and it doesn't expire.
Well, I mean, at the same time, you know something. We see this same stuff. We've seen this guy Madoff. We see this other guy down there right now. I put an article about him up on the site recently. I think it was last night I put it up about this criminal from down in Florida. And I'll give you his name in a minute here. His name is Joel Steinger. And Mutual Benefits Corp. stole $1 billion by selling fake life insurance policies. And he I know that you'd sign is true. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And why aren't people absolutely out of their minds with anger? I don't see it.
Well, you know, Darrell, maybe they have $160,000 and they're in need of a kidney because they're going to need a rabbi to get a spare kidney and go to Israel where the government are involved and the hospitals are involved and their lackeys in the U.S. are involved. You know, it depends on what level of this you want to go in. And, you know, trafficking in organs, we don't know where, you know, whether these donors, you know, like in donor kebabs and are actually volunteering or to have a gun to their head. I'll leave that open.
Well, how about this one, Noah? I'm going to ask you to, you remember this. Remember when that Zoe appeal, the French appeal that went to Chad and they were taking children out of the airport? Well, you want to know this? All the leadership of that and all the people they were working for back in France were Jewish, Zionist Jewish, and many people believe that those children did not have, they weren't orphans, they had families. And many people believe those kids were being swept up and scooped up to have their organs harvested.
Well, you know, Darrell, just, you know, if people do actually look into that, I mean, it was that important to cover up this Zionist crime that they sent their little monkey over. Sarkozy actually went to Chad to say, listen, I'm representing the international Jews here. Let my people go or else. And what did Chad do? They, you know, released him. So what do you do when you live in a small country, Darrell, that you arrest people, you catch them with their fingers in the bloody cookie proverbial jar? I mean, they're guilty, and you're told by the higher ups, you know, let them go or we'll bomb you.
Well, that's right. That's right. And you know, see, I was talking to Dr. Nancy Banks, who's just finishing her book, and I have good news to report to everybody that her book on the AIDS fraud and how it's all worked its way into the top Zionist bankers and the criminals, and she's got this thing sussed out in a really succinct form. It's going to be out soon. But she told me that in South Africa, what had happened was that the Jewish owners of the mines down there, and many of those owners go right back to New York City and to London, had outbreaks, massive outbreaks of tuberculosis in the mines. And in order to not have to pay the mining tuberculosis claims caused by the mining industry, They got in New York. They got a guy named Templeman. Yes, Maurice Templeman, I believe his name is, as a director of the study on AIDS health in the world. He got included in the list of AIDS symptoms, tuberculosis. With that new designation of tuberculosis being a symptom, they went back to South Africa and claimed all of the workers that had TB were actually AIDS patients, so that the mines did not have to pay any money out to all these workers who were dying of tuberculosis. And she's got this stuff proven. And I'm talking about, we're talking about tens of thousands of men who spent their whole life underground.
You're talking about mines in South Africa. You're not mentioning Oppenheimer.
Oh, well, that's right. Well, that's right.
Here we go again.
And everybody has to know, and they may not remember, that Oppenheimer gave the Rothschild Bauer his first job back in Hanover as a clerk inside his trading house. So,
well, you know, Darrell, I've given, in 20 years of working, I've given a couple of people a start, and I've employed people. A couple of them are now doing better than I have, and probably could teach me a trick or two. You know, that's, he gave Bauer a leg up, and he came back and didn't bite him. Just showed him how it really should be done.
Yeah, let's become a super criminal here. But, you know, interesting to note, Noel, and here's another little tidbit from history. That'll bring everybody up to the date. You know, when you take a look back at the Spice Island trades back in the 1400s and 1500s, when the Portuguese were sailing around Cape of Good Hope through South Africa over into Indonesia and Malaysia, and they were bringing back clove and all kinds of different, you know, pepper and all these other things that were not available. And these things were more valuable at that time than gold was, because it was a precious commodity, and they brought it back. Now, these Portuguese that were doing the trading were Jews. And then from that, the Spanish started using the same Jewish rich traders to get the spices and things out of South America. And when things went south for them on the Iberian Peninsula because of Isabel and Ferdinand the King forcing these people to come clean on their criminality, they all emigrated. So guess where they went? They went to Holland. And guess what? Holland became the biggest trader in the Indies. Holland immediately gave up. Portugal lost all of their holdings. They lost all of their connections, and they all went to the Holland Dutch. And from the Dutch went to England. It's all Zionist Jewish money, and they all were just stealing blind. And then they were set up from those connections to move right into dealing in human flesh, and that was in the black slave trade. These people didn't miss a beat. And then when that wasn't working for them anymore, they went right from that with the Delano, Jewish Delano family and the Sassoons, and started dealing opium and drugs into China. These people are just monsters, and they do it century after century, and they're doing it again now.
Yeah. Well, you know, Darrell, the spice industry was very important at the time. We didn't have, you know, fridges and freezers that we could store meat, and so it was absolutely more, more precious than gold. I mean, this there was a point in having a cow. If you killed your cow, it'd be rotten in a couple of days. So, you know, this was super important trade at the time. And, you know, and then we could get on to you need your little slaves to deal with it. You know, grow it, harvest it, bring it back, transport it, and this brings into side businesses. But this is typical, Darrell. This is the same, a continuation. There wasn't just a spice business. Coming with the spice business, you had the slave business, and then you had, you know, banking was absolutely important.
All right, that's exactly right. That's exactly.
You know, you had to insure the ships, and, you know, and the centuries went by. You know, you have Lloyd's, the names list of Lloyd's. I'd love to know who they were.
Well, guess what? No, I'll tell you. Guess how Lloyd's started? Lloyd's was the coffee shop and place that Rothschild set up himself every morning, and got his breakfast at Lloyd's across the street from the trading house that he did his money trading in. And so much activity was centered around Rothschild in this Lloyd's center that it started doing business on its own, and the next thing you know, they had their own corporation that was doing financial work, and that's how Lloyd's started.
So Darrell, hold on, let me clarify that. So we're you're saying that Rothschild went into a little coffee shop and he was giving inside information, and he spawned one of his other businesses.
He spawned a second business, which was a satellite business. Now this sets you up to understand what he did with the Americans, okay? With the likes of Goldman and Sachs family. These people emigrated to America penniless in Europe, and all of a sudden get to America, and all of a sudden they're flush with cash and capital. They're Jewish emigres of Russian origin, and all of a sudden they set themselves up in trading and money instruments that were unique for their time. Now, why were they unique? Because Rothschild used his influence over the Senate and Congress to enact rules within the financial system that would allow a company to start dealing in certain types of futures contracts. And guess who got the contract? One of his new satellite businesses, Goldman Sachs. And Goldman and Sachs business, of course, they've been allowed privately to get some money for themselves, but most of that cash has been shipped back to this same center of trust companies and shell companies like Veolia and the rest of it. All of that stuff that you never see in his name, but he runs, owns, and controls. The Virgin Group. You can go on and on and on in this stuff. You know, EADS over there, the manufacturer of jet airplanes over here in Europe. It's all big Rothschild money. The train business, big Rothschild money. When you were going to visit the south of France, you get on the Autoroute du Sud de la France. That is privately operated by Rothschild interests. So every car that passes through those toll gates is sending him a kickback. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable when you do the work, then you see the research. You cannot believe what these people have been able to do right under our noses. Right under our noses.
Well, you know, Daryl, we're talking about, you know, front men here. And now, this is what's interesting about this recent case in New Jersey.
Yes.
With all these rabbis getting arrested for, cleaning up money and, you know, funny money.
But it wasn't that much money. Talk about that, no, because, yeah.
This is I said it to you, Daryl, privately. The rabbis got caught for $3
million. That's peanuts.
$3 million today. I mean, I'll write you a piece of paper, Daryl. This is worth about as much as a Federal Reserve note. Why are they after the Jews? Now, this, you're reading on the Jewish media. I think the Jewish media, Daryl, have picked up on it. And people have been saying, ha-ha, there you go, typical. There's the Jews again in Israel saying, this is anti-Semitism, anti-Semitism. And I think this time there's something to it. Somebody is sending a signal to, you know, the Jews and Israel for a minor affair, Daryl.
My take, and maybe you haven't heard my take, but my take is that the Lubavitch is consolidating its control over the Jewish community.
Getting rid of Syrian Jews. I mean, we talked about that the last one. Getting rid of these little ancillary little groups of Jews around.
Exactly.
A takeover, absolute takeover. But for $3 million, Bernanke is giving out trillions and $3 million. I mean, $1 million used to be a big amount. Now we know about quadrillions of dollars.
Yeah.